All right, guys, we are back with The Crunch, our second episode of our relaunch. We are welcoming Shane Beaumont back into the studio. How you going, Shane?
Very good. Good. Nice to see you again, Jess.
And you. We have got also our guest today, who is John Hunter from Million Porteous Properties, who we're going to be chatting to later. But in the meantime, we just want to kick off. The REWA Awards were a couple of weeks ago. It's always a hot topic, so I want to get your take on it, Shane.
Yeah.
It's always big news amongst the industry for a couple of weeks. So I just want to chat to you.
Amongst agents.
Yes, so that's my first agents. Question for you is because it is big news amongst agents. Yeah. You know, we all get the lists and we see what everyone wore to the ball and we see everyone up on stage accepting their awards and getting their photos. Who, aside from the industry, do buyers and sellers care who won those awards? Do they know?
Not in my opinion. I haven't seen it. Obviously, I've won awards of this nature. I can honestly say I've not had ever someone ring me and say, Shane, I know you're number one for REWA. Is it possible for you to come and see me about my home? I can honestly say I've never had that call. But what I can say is the stats don't lie. If you're doing well and you're winning awards, you're probably going to have 30 signs out there, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of marketing out there. Momentum comes with that. So the actual award itself, I haven't seen that take place. I know a lot of agents promote that, which and the reality is, and I think most agents limit to this, a lot of it is ego, which I get. And there's not one agent probably in the world that if they won a top award wouldn't promote it. But I don't think that, or do not think the public probably have the same perception of it as what, because they're not a grandmaster. It sounds like you're a wizard.
Yes.
You know?
It does.
But I think the fact that the stats are there, regardless of what category is, everyone talks about different categories. If you're selling $50 million of property, 80, 90, 100, you're doing some serious numbers, regardless of what category you're in, and you're probably doing very well. So,
on those numbers, so obviously the Grandmaster list gets published, the Master list gets published.
It does sound like a wizard, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
Merlin, Merlin Award.
Yes, yes. a wizard of property, you know?
Yes.
That's okay. do you think, so the list get published, they have the number of listings sold and the value of those properties. And some agents, and I haven't seen it so much this year, but some agents do like to say this is the value of the property sold this year. Thoughts on that for the general public? Because if they ran their numbers, for some agents it's probably a very good thing, maybe like Western Suburbs agents. For some who sell in other areas, what are your thoughts on that?
I think, look, momentum, with momentum comes credibility. And I think if you're looking at, John's here, so we'll talk about the Western Suburbs, you might be an incredible agent, but if you haven't sold anything at $3 million and the person you're going up against to has sold 13, and you're both on par in presentation, it's only natural you're probably going to go with the proven operator because that's credibility. And everyone started somewhere. You can't compare your chapter one to someone's chapter 20. But the reality is that's about the real estate making your bones. You've got to do your time. And I think it is hard for young guys trying to crack into that market. And I think John will attest to trying to get to those certain markets. And, in fact, any market really is the perfect opportunity for young people. If you want to be a part of that and look long-term, not short-term, you want to try and be a part of a team or somewhere like that where you're going to learn great lessons, because it is very hard to just come in and write sustainably big numbers. You might get one development here and there and you see people coming out of those top lists, but longevity is the key in this game, and being around good operators and learning from them is probably what's going to help people most.
And what about the other part of my question, which was what about the actual sharing of the GCI? Or the, you know, for an agent who doesn't sell in a really high net worth area?
It's a really good question. So the average fee, do you know what the average fee in WA is?
I don't know, 1% to 2%?
Well, it's about 2.63%.
Okay. Okay.
Median house price is about $535,000. So the interesting thing, there's a sweet spot in all these numbers. Now, I don't believe the person that writes $50 million in most circumstances, if they're only selling in the Western Suburbs, they're probably going to be writing less GCI than an agent that's written $35 million with a median house price of $500,000, because the reality is the fees are going to be higher.
Yeah.
So value's one thing, but as we've said before, and I've spoken to Ross about it, profitability is the key, ego is the enemy. some of these guys on there, I can guarantee they'd be riding half as much and they're probably more profitable because they've got more going out. They might have big teams. So I don't think the value is everything. But again, if you're starting to ride up, you know, 100 million, 60, 70 million, you're going to be doing quite well. And you've worked bloody hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is for a lot of the reps that, and Tom Panos talks about the million-dollar agent.
Yes.
They've got a PA. They've probably got a 60-40 split. They've got expensive cars, expensive suits.
Yeah,
they're probably flying business. So at the end of the day, it's really important that's what's left over, not the turnover.
They're filling up with premium petrol.
So I do think some of those, some guys in that those categories, if they're only riding maybe 20 million and they've got a PA or a team, their profitability is not going to be as high as someone like John, who's only got obviously one administrator to look after and some marketing. You know.
Yeah. The other.
Do you agree with that?
I would. I think it's all about protecting your fees, though, in the Western sellers. And some of the agents I've worked under have taught me how to get those higher fees. But it's based on reward for effort and delivering a higher service. And it's all based on results, really, for me.
Yeah. And that credibility, again, if you're coming in and you're – I use Willie Portis, for example. If Willie's coming in on a property on Jutland Parade, he's – sold on Jutland Parade many times, he probably warrants a higher fee than someone who's their first time really wants to get in there, and that's probably going to be a fee-based competition they're going to try and win it on because they just don't have the credibility.
Yeah.
So those guys with the big track records can have ask for good fees because they deserve it. They've got the proven history. So I think that's probably something to note too.
It comes back to a conversation that I've been having with agents for years and years, and particularly when the market was a little bit tougher a couple of years ago, when agents would say to me, you know, people are coming in and they're offering 1% and what, you know, how can I justify my fee? And the answer is, well, how can you justify your fee? That's your job to understand what you bring to the table as an agent. Otherwise, why would the seller trust you with their listing?
I get that. I speak to a lot of agents and want training and what have you, and they always say, oh, I didn't win it, but that agent does 1.8%.
Yeah.
So what I say to them, especially the guys I train over East, if they're 1.8% and you're at 2.5, it's not that you were too expensive and they were too cheap. They didn't see value in you at 2.5.
Exactly.
So you've got to change your mindset. And if you believe that and you're prepared to walk away at that level, well, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I do not believe it's a fee-based decision. It's where they see value the most.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I know I've been beaten because someone's beat me on fee. It wasn't the fee. They just didn't say, well, Shane, if you're X amount more and he's X, we're prepared to take a gamble at that level.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fine.
That's fine. Quickly back on these awards for this year. So we mentioned Grandmaster, the Wizard, Grandmaster and Master. So Grandmaster is over 50
million and 100 sales, I think,
And 100. Mm. And then Master is over 10?
I think it's over 36 million, I think. Okay. Master, yeah.
So I'm just looking at the Grandmaster list for this year and it's 2.5 pages long. And then if we look at it in 2019, 2020, it's half a page long. And obviously that's reflective of the market, increased value in properties. Yeah. Do you think that it has as much prestige when this list starts to blow out and out, or should it be reconsidered every year based on value so that this list kind of stays a very prestigious 20 people list?
For many years, people were saying the Grandmaster was too high if you weren't selling lumpy deals.
Yeah.
So I look at probably 4 years ago, 4 years ago, I think Linton and myself were number one or two.
Yeah.
And I think we're around the 80 or 90 mark. And then last year, I think we were one and two and we're both around the 160 mark. So you'll find that it does move up and down, but I still remember people saying back then it was too hard. So I guess it's too hard to just shift it all the time. But, yeah, no question the pool is getting bigger as the values grow. If on the back of 30% growth, even if you sold the same amount 3 years ago, which some areas have had 30%, you're probably, if you're a 50 million, you're probably a 35 million dollar writer, you know.
Yeah.
But don't underestimate. To get to that level, one thing that also should be noted – back when, well, let's say 4 years ago, there were 16,000 properties on the market. So if you're doing these sort of numbers in a market that's only sat for a while now at 8,000, you're doing incredibly well and you're well sought after when it comes to choosing someone in your area. You've obviously been doing the right thing. You know, I think it's easy to say, oh, the prices have gone up, but the pool of listings that you're going to be, I guess, accessible to is so much smaller.
How much, what's time, I'll ask you this because I don't know off the top of my head and I know you're an encyclopedia of real estate knowledge. Time on market at the moment, what's the average days on market?
16.
And what was it?
82.
Okay, so in terms of the insane, right?
Yeah. 16, but mark this, whatever the day is, I reckon by the end of the year, it'll be back out to high 20s.
Is this a Ross Hunter prediction that we're going to look back on for years to come?
This is the crunch prediction, so I can't take all the credit. But I think that's drifting. So it's got down to 16, the last release for the quarter for Rewa. I think you'd agree. I can't see it staying at that level. And I do believe we'll start to see stock levels maybe closer to 10,000 as all this construction finally starts to come out of the ground and people free the market up a bit.
So, but then the stat I can never find is if you've got 8,000 properties on the market, but days on market's only 16 versus 16,000 properties on the market and days on market is 52, then the actual volume of sales for the year has to be.
It's more at the moment. So the same week last year was, I think, 840 approximately, the same week last year.
Yeah.
This year was sitting, I think it was around about 930, like last week. For the week. So you can imagine if you've got more stock on the market, if only 935, this is sounds basic, sorry for trying to suck eggs, but 935 properties a week, if there's 18,000, it's going to take longer to get through that saturation of property. So five selling a month.
You said that was basic and I'm like blankly looking at him.
There's 20 listings on the market in Mandurah.
Yes.
Five are selling a month, there's 4 months supply.
Yes.
So basically at the moment, the sales are at great numbers, but there's just not enough stock, so it's chewing through very quickly.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's why average days is so much shorter.
Yes. But then when you talk about the agents doing the work in a market where there's such a low volume of stock, realistically over the year the volume of stock has been the same. It's just that it's moving more quickly,
the sale ratio is up around in western suburbs, I would say it'd be in the 80s. Yeah. In areas I use Gosnells, for example, the clearance rate got down to like 56%.
Yes.
Now it's sitting up around 80.
Okay.
So things are moving.
Okay.
And I say like a broken clock is right twice a day. Unfortunately, the last 4 months, even the people that overpriced property, the market got there eventually, as opposed to going in there having those crucial conversations going, guys, this is the right advice. Come day 87 on a 90-day listing, someone pops up.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it wasn't because they were right. It's just the market got there. Which makes you wonder, just on that, if they were priced right at the start, what they could have achieved when there was competition. But that's another matter.
100% agree. 100% agree with that one.
Yeah, it's very hard to say to someone, you're going to miss out when they've seen it's been advertised for the 19th time as a home open this Saturday. Mm-hmm. They said, well, where was everyone else? As opposed to that first viewing where you're going to have as most competition.
That's the Shane Beaumont, the constant preach that we get from you.
I think it's most agents' preach.
Well, should be. All right, that was great, Shane. As always, thank you very much for that. We're going to roll on to our guest, John Hunter from William Porteous Properties International. John was a, and we've just been talking about the Grandmasters, he was a Rewa Grandmaster in the top 20 agents in WA the first time this year. And so I've got the figures as 39 properties in 2021 to the value of 89 mil, but I think John's going to correct me on that.
It was 95 million transacted, but a couple of those were purchased properties for clients in the western suburbs.
Beautiful. So huge year this year. And as we've just said, first time I've seen you on the Grandmaster list, correct? So can you just tell us a little bit about what's been the difference for you this year?
I think the main driver was the market obviously increased, and I saw that at the very start of last year. I made the call at the time. I thought I was ready in my personal life but also in my career life to take on an assistant and really invest that time in the business. I have two young children, so that was really important to me to be around for them. But now it was my time to really take the business to the next level if it could be done. So in May, I made the call to hire Courtney Kemp, who's my lovely EA. And we work as a team, and it's just the goal is to double the business, and it's quadrupled in a year.
I wanted to ask you about, and Shane and I had a little bit of a chat before, obviously before the podcast. One of the things that came up for both of us is you've had some pretty incredible mentors and worked under some pretty incredible reps in your time. And I wanted to talk to you, and Shane actually mentioned before about agents coming into the industry and kind of coming into a team. Mm-hmm. You came under Simon McGrath, who's your first mentor in the industry. Do you think that having that introduction to real estate, especially in the area you sell Western Suburbs, has led to your success? You're only 27. Mm-hmm. You're so young to be selling in that area. Do you think that that has helped?
Absolutely. I mean, I owe the start of my career to Simon McGrath completely. He gave me an opportunity. I was 18 years old, pimpled-faced kid from Albany, you know, very humble beginnings. And I couldn't get a job anywhere in real estate because I didn't have my license and I had never had any experience before. And I was door-knocking agencies in the western suburbs. I knew that's where I always wanted to be, in the luxury market of Perth. And I door-knocked, and he was in a very busy day, and he took the time to meet with me for 5 minutes, which turned into a two-hour conversation in the boardroom, and I walked out with a EA position, which was pretty I look back now, and I'm so grateful to him for that opportunity.
What do you think it was about you in that 5 minutes that had him sitting down for 2 hours?
I was very excited at the time and still am, but very driven. I was taught from a young age work ethic was your biggest asset and family values. If you had those two things and you worked incredibly hard, you can achieve anything. The sky's the limit. It doesn't matter where you grew up, how you grew up or where you're from. It's all about how you present yourself, and hard work gets you there.
I think the fact you were willing to do that to get the job in the first place is a pretty good audition.
Yeah. Also just so from the country and so sheltered, had no idea. That was probably a little bit pushy, but he liked it. And he gave me the opportunity, which was really special. And I do a lot to that. I consider that my undergraduate university degree in real estate with him. And then I think my postgrad was the year with Vivian Yap, which was exceptional learning. And just learning of two different people with two different styles and approaches gave me a really good foundation to know, okay, what kind of agent do I want to be going forward when I am out on my own? And it also allowed me the opportunity to learn under someone. And if you made a mistake, they were there to help guide you. I think, just to go back to your earlier question about agents starting out, I think it's all horses for courses. I was 18 years old trying to break into the western suburbs. Even now at 27, people still look at me and think, oh, you look young. And then they hear me talk and about my family and they go, oh, okay, we relate. We both have children at the schools. You're doing the school runs. You've got a house in the area you're building. So it's relatable. But back then, it was really important to be under someone to learn. And it's a very conservative area, the western suburbs, to break into. So I was young, gay, no family connections to the area. And to build up there, it was crucial to be under someone and learn from them.
I think in any area, especially the western suburbs, knowledge is power. You can't get that overnight. That comes with experience working under, obviously, top operators. And again, I say to any rep out there, if you want to get to the top, you've got to learn things, not just from one agent, but different dynamics. And if you can get those snippets from everyone and sort of combine it, I think you're going to fast track your learning, which is obviously what you've done. Mm-hmm.
Shane, I know you wanted to ask John about working under an icon of the industry where he is now. Did you?
Yeah, I guess what's been obviously the market's changed a huge amount from obviously the peaks of obviously when Willie in the heyday. But what's something that, regardless of time, is something you've learnt from someone like him and that operation?
Willie is incredible, or Mr. Porteous, but we all call him Willie. Yep. He's an amazing man. I think from the outside, even when I was in Western Suburbs real estate the first 4 years of my career, I always had this perception of him that he would be hoity-toity and very luxury and everything over the top. And he's actually quite the opposite. He is really grounded, really hardworking. Probably the key thing I've learned from him is a very client-focused relationship. So that can come across in a multitude of ways, but he always puts the client first and himself second, and I think that's what's led to his iconic career.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. I think if you think about anyone in the country when it comes to high-end, Willie's one of the first mentioned, no question. He's probably one of the pioneer of luxury real estate in WA for sure.
In the West. And he used to do deals where he would get a call from Mrs. Smith wanting to see a house in Double Bay on Friday, and he'd be like, oh, I can't get there at 12 o'clock, but I can get to Double Bay by 4 o'clock on Friday. And he'd catch the morning flight, go over and show a property and then sell it for $10 million and fly back that night and do opens on Saturday. So he still works 6.5 days a week at 75, 76 years of age. He always jokes he you know, he has to keep working because he can't afford his coffin, which is clearly not true. But he loves the industry. He loves working with our team. And it's a very family-based business. Mm. Olivia Porteous is Willie's daughter and Andrew Porteous, his son. So they all work in the company and it's a very family-run business.
I think, again, just being hearing those conversations, one thing with COVID, we spoke about Ross. Unfortunately, a lot of people working from home or what have you, but just being obviously around someone like that and hearing those conversations would be a great experience. You just pick up constantly.
Constantly learning. And again, from my first two mentors or people who gave me great opportunities, Simon and Vivian, Willie again had a completely different style. I mean, Willie doesn't even have a computer on his desk. He has a wonderful assistant, Elaine McCormack, and she reads his emails to him and then he dictates the replies. Yeah. And everything's done from his phone. And Willie's amazing. He'll do the morning meetings and then he'll go off just driving through the suburb and he'll think, oh, I've got to call Mr. and Mrs. Fendor over here. And he makes a phone call, but he can call the top 10, 20 richest people in the country as their private mobile number direct. Yeah. So he's incredible how he runs out of his little phone and does these huge numbers.
Perfect example of someone that's made passion their paycheck. You don't get to that level if you don't. It's one thing to be good, but to love it is when you really excel. And obviously he's done that over time.
Yeah, you don't work 6.5 days as a mid-seven-year-old unless you love what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think the other thing that a lot of agents struggle with, I think, especially as they get to volume or they get to a higher level, is bringing on an assistant and training an assistant? Shane, you were the perfect example of that, who struggled to bring someone to actually help you.
Yeah, and again, probably for me, it's being perfectionist, not letting go.
Of course.
And eventually you have to put faith in people. Yeah. And I think you'd probably agree, John, looking back, you always say, I probably should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
I say to Tom, my coach, he's like, we're not coaching anymore if you don't do this because something's going to change. And inevitably they're right. And obviously when you find someone like Courtney, you go, wow, I probably should have done this a lot earlier.
Well, that was my question is, having come from such strong mentors and people, you know, who put his faith in you at such a young age with, you know, not a lot behind you, did that help you make that decision more quickly, do you think, to bring someone on? And has that enabled you to train her really well?
Yes, of course. I think Simon and Vivian, also people who I was working around at the time, people like Michelle Kerr. I remember when she took on her first assistant and it was terrifying when she had two children, a mortgage, a husband. And, you know, you're really backing yourself, but also you're responsible for someone else's livelihood. Mm. And that's a big call at the time. You know, it's not a, you know, major corporate company. You've got one salary to cover, but that's a big call and you don't want to mess them around. So I was really fortunate Willie invested in me to do that for the first 2 or 3 months to just give me that buffer of support. Mm. And it was the best decision.
Yeah.
I was ready at the time. Everyone wins. Courtney won. Courtney's come up. We've come up together and really grown in that time. And I think the biggest thing with an EA is the right synergy at the start, and your strengths and your weaknesses. Probably that your weakness is their strengths, and to get that right synergy, the right person. Mm. And definitely for me, it was the heart in the right place and always putting the client first.
Yeah, that's a really good point you bring up. Too often I think agents talk about getting a PA for them.
Yes.
The reason I've this year brought on a person to be on the outside running around is I want my client to have an amazing experience. And I think luxury, you talk about different markets. Luxury, in my opinion, doesn't have a price point. Mm-hmm. Luxury is when you answer the phone knowing who's calling, you get back to people, you give them first-class service. I don't think, regardless of what your home is worth, everyone's entitled to that level of service.
Absolutely.
You can't do that if you're in back-to-back meetings. You need to have backup plans, so the client is winning, as well as you having a life, which is also important. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the client, their whole experience should be better because you've got the right people in place.
Mm-hmm. 100%. My last question for you, John, and again, this was one from Shane, so Shane, you can add to it if you want. But what's been the biggest surprise? You were a 17-year-old, door knocking, wanting to get into luxury real estate in the western suburbs. You came from Albany. What was your perception of real estate and what the job would be, and how is that different to what you know of it now?
I think the perception is from the outside world that it's a lot of flashy suits, nice cars, people out having coffee and all of that. Yes, I have a nice car. I dress very nicely, but at the end of the day, I'm answering phone calls and emails from my clients at 6 a.m. before I go to the gym and get the kids off to school. I'm immediately in the office or meetings at 9 a.m. and they go throughout the day, and then there's school pickup and afternoon sports. But then I'm back on meetings at 6 till 9 o'clock at night. So to write these sort of numbers, it's also 24/7. I just flew out on a Saturday night to surprise my mum, my second mum, for her 60th in Brisbane and Sydney. I flew with my three sisters, and we're in the car ride in the airport, and they hadn't seen me work. They've always seen me at a family function where I put the phone down, I've set the time aside, and they're in the car with me, and they just were like, wow, the calls that come through, thinking on your feet, it's nonstop. You're on holiday, but you're working.
Yeah.
And I said to them, well, this is what my clients need. Mm. We've got two launching this week in Dalkeith and Shenton Park, and I need to give them everything. It doesn't matter if I'm away for 3 days. Mm-hmm. They want to know what's going on. We've got to give them the updates. And, yeah, you're working for them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think and that's when we talk about those awards, it's not so much just about the agent. It's an opportunity to thank the people around you, because when I was in Singapore for a short break with my daughter, first time on a plane, unfortunately with my job, I've got to be on the phone. That's what clients need. And my wife and daughter, she'll appreciate it. But I try to make a conserve, if not do it around them. But they're the ones that are constantly, I'd say, hearing you on the phone, nipping out and what have you. So there's a lot of sacrifice, not just from the agent, but the people around you have to be pretty understanding. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to have that understanding, because it is a 24/7, it's very much a consuming job.
Yeah, I think it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
Real estate is very much a lifestyle, and it's 24/7.
Yeah.
Wonderful. On that note, Shane, have you got anything to add? Questions for John?
I noticed you brought a coffee in, John. Any shout-outs to great coffee places you want to give?
I love our local one in Subiaco. It's called The Corner Store. It's just by and Cafe Melograno. It's next to Juanita's Bar, so they're great coffee in our local neighbourhood where we sell.
Beautiful.
Good to hear.
I'll let the girls know, because we're always looking
that's
for coffee.
That's why I asked,
because
you were actually just
thank
asking
you.
That.
Thank you. That's it from us this month, guys. Thank you so much, Shane, again for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
You,
great
John.
To have.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful. We'll see you next month.
See ya.